Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, September 15, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Harare City Council says it will continue to clean up the city following its demolition yesterday of illegal vendor structures at the 4th Street bus terminus in Harare.
The city council officials destroyed our stores at the 4th Street bus terminus. And they just came without notice. And destroyed our stores with my goods were inside the shop, so I lost everything which I was surviving from.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is leading a delegation of business executives seeking investment opportunities in Zimbabwe.
The Herald Business and the Bankers Association of Zimbabwe are hosting the delegation, which in our view is a high-powered delegation of about 30 to 40 people who are here on a three-day official visit.
And the MDCT resolves to use a protest to force President Robert Mugabe's government to deliver on its election promises, chief among them providing jobs for unemployed Zimbabweans.
The Harare City Council says it will continue to clean up the city following the demolition yesterday of illegal vendor structures at the 4th Street bus terminus in the capital. Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni, though refusing to comment officially today, told Studio 7 that the council will continue its cleanup exercise, adding the local authority is currently reviewing the exercise that has drawn the ire of vendors who charge the authorities have for years been accepting their stall payments of between $5 to $20 daily. Most of the vendors who spoke with Studio 7 said the cleanup exercise reminded them of the 2005 Murambatswina or exercise cleanup filth, which left thousands of people homeless as the government raised down what it said were illegal structures. Edward Chanakira, a cell phone accessories vendor, says he lost his stall, which he has used for the past 7 years.
The city council officials destroyed our stores at the 46 bus terminal. And they just came without notice and destroyed our stores with my goods inside the shop. So I lost everything which I was surviving from. That is where my livelihood was coming from. Now I don't have anything to do. I don't even have anything to talk about.
How long were you running the business for? And also, did you have permission to set up your store?
We had permission from council, but it was verbal permission mostly because the association which represented us brought the council officials for a meeting with us as vendors. That is about 7 years ago, and they allowed us to build our stores, and they came here and there to collect revenue from us. But we knew it was very corrupt the way they were doing their things, but we could not do anything because if you did anything to ask those corrupt officials to come clear on what they were doing, you'd be victimized. They would push you out of those stores.
When you were paying for the stores, were you getting any receipts? Were they coming on official city council business? And how often did this happen?
This happened almost on a daily basis. But in recent weeks, we were now being given receipts from the council officials. But we don't know why they just came all of a sudden to just push us out.
But there are also allegations that most of the stores that were demolished were built there illegally. What's your view on that?
I wouldn't understand the way the council operates, but if they were illegal, why would they have left us to operate for almost a decade? I've been there, I think, since my first child. She was born in 2009. Now she's almost 5 years old, and I was surviving from that store.
What kind of business were you running? And were you able to at least save some of your wares?
I was selling cell phone accessories, but I did not manage to recover anything from my store because when they demolished them, I was not present that day. I went to church on Saturday.
So what is the way forward now?
Now we are just hoping this new union we have, the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, will be able to help us.
That was Harare vendor Edward Chanakira on the line from Harare with Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye. The National Vendors Union says it will take legal action against the Harare City Council. Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye speaks with Chairman Samuel Wadzai about the issue.
Obviously, we are going to engage with our legal department so that we start legal proceedings against this clear violation of human rights. Our constitution is very clear in terms of ensuring that the government supports efforts by individuals to fend for their families. So this move alone is a clear violation of that a clear constitutional provision. So we are going to challenge it. We already started engaging with our lawyers, and today close to 100 members of our union came to our offices reporting, giving us evidence in terms of what happened to their properties so that we can start this process of challenging this in the court of law.
But from your observation, the city council, didn't it have the right to demolish the buildings if they were built there illegally? What's the right course to go when something like that happens?
The right course to go is to engage with the people. Everyone is aware of the situation that is prevailing in Zimbabwe. There are no jobs. So to just come and destroy somebody's livelihood is just wrong morally. So we had expected them to come and engage us as the union of any move that they were going to take that was going to affect our membership, as we had agreed.
That was National Vendors Association Chairman Samuel Wadzai on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.
Mutare residents today expressed their reservations at the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Debt Assumption Bill 2014, which, among other issues, seeks to take over and settle liabilities incurred by the RBZ before December 2001-2008. If passed into law, the RBZ will take over debt worth over $1.3 billion. Correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
Mutare residents raised their concern during a consultation meeting called by Parliament's Finance Committee and was chaired by lawmaker David Chafika. The residents said the proposed law will make burden the overtaxed citizens when they did not benefit from the money borrowed by the bank in the first place. The RBZ was criticized during Gideon Gono's for engaging in quasi-fiscal activities which involved handing out farm equipment and agricultural inputs to farmers. Mutare residents said only those who supported ZANU-PF and were well-connected benefited from the schemes, adding those who benefited should pay back the money. The residents argued that the bill should only tackle the RBZ's debt that was incurred to mitigate against the drought. The $1.3 billion debt accrued between 1991 and 31 December 2008 is shared between 33 non-government organizations, local and foreign banks, local and foreign firms, which provided funds, services, and goods, among other things, to mostly quasi-government institutions, departments, and ministries. Freeman Boso, a Mutare resident, says it would be unjust and cruel to make the RBZ foot the entire debt, whereupon some institutions and individuals behind the debt are capacitated to honor what they owe. He says on the issue of about $2.8 million owed to a Chinese firm, Deadong, which supplied tractors for the mechanization program that benefited farmers, the recipients have to pay for themselves.
I think the critical issues there are to ascertain whether this bill will stimulate economic and social development, because the assumption of this debt by government has got implications on the poor people who have not really benefited from what RBZ has done. So it's critical also for Parliament to debate and make a critical analysis of who owed RBZ and make follow-ups on people who owe RBZ and try and seek recourse.
David Mtambirwa of the Mutare Residents and Debt Payers Association says if the bill is passed into law, which he says is obvious, Zimbabweans will be worse off than they are currently.
I think it's a direct assault on the marginalized, the poor, the downtrodden, the people who are failing to make ends meet, who are being made or forced to assume a debt which they did not take care. These debts were incurred by some people who are in higher authorities for populist policies, but then it's now cascading to the marginalized, the poor, the downtrodden.
And this year, Mtare men who attended today's half-day RBZ data assumption bill consultation meeting in the city says the RBZ only needs to categorize the debt into two. He says the central bank only needs to assume the debt which was accrued to bankroll programs that were nationalistic, such as to purchasing drugs and drought relief.
I think the debt, the RBZ debt assumption bill, comes at a very bad time, when the poor people, the poor citizens of this country, are expected to cough up more in order to cover funds, monies, resources that were siphoned by those, the fat kids, right? And now the state will have to assume that bill. It becomes part of the national debt. It's being said 1.122 billion. So plus the 8.3, 8.5 billion in national debt, it comes to about 10 billion. And it means the nation has to foot that bill.
But new farmer and businessman Charles Tavazaza disagrees. He says the debt has to be taken over by the RBZ. He adds the central bank should first save the country's foreign debt to regain international trust before honoring local creditors.
To pay, right? Already we are saying the state has assumed NRZ, the debt for the NRZ. It wants to assume the debt for Telone. It wants to assume the debt for Supco. It wants to assume so many other debts that have been accumulated historically. But the state has no resources to pay, right? So how are the citizens going to get these monies? Secondly, the poor people, we lost monies through the insurance, our pensions, through the same banking system. And this bill does not include those losses incurred by the poor people. It's only for the few. So I think it has to be holistic, right? It should include everybody, right? But also, more importantly, the parliament should actually come up with an independent debt audit commission to assist in verifying the exact amount of this debt.
Tavazaza says there is need to review the debt and identify capable institutions and individuals that benefited from the loans and force them to pay part of what they owe than for the government to summarily take over the entire debt. Finance Portfolio Committee Chairperson David Chafika said his team is on a fact-finding mission which will take them to Bulawayo, Gweru and Harare.
What to say, this is what we went to Mtare, this is what we received, Gweru, so the views of the people are 1, 2, 3, 4. And it is Parliament which is going to say yes before this bill becomes an act of Parliament. We are a technical committee who take technical information and consider them in consultation with the relevant arms of government, which includes the Minister of Finance. And then after that, then we'll do a report in the chamber, in the August House, and then allow members of Parliament also to debate on the same issue. So it will not end with us.
Some of the creditors include the National Merchant Bank, NMB, Kingdom, Econet Bonds, Anglo-American, Zimasco, Grattan Cotton, Bank ABC, Mimosa, Zimplans, Oasis Motors, Reserve Bank of Malawi, Exim Bank of China, Bank of Negara Malaysia, including Zimbabwe-based non-governmental organizations. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mtare, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
The increasingly desperate Zimbabwe government is expected to make a fresh appeal to the International Monetary Fund to extend another loan to help resuscitate the ailing economy. The International Monetary Fund, which is sending its mission to Harare this week under the Staff Monitored Program, has insisted that Harare pays its huge external debt before requesting fresh loans. But insiders say Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa has indicated that he will continue to push for IMF funding to try and reboot the tanking economy.
In his mid-term fiscal policy review Thursday, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa said Zimbabwe is saddled with, quote, an unsustainable external debt overhang amounting to $8.8 billion as at June 2014. Harare and the IMF agreed on the SMP program last year and was supposed to have run from April to December 2013, but it has since been extended following disruptions during last year's electoral period. The new ZANU-PF government also pleaded for more time to implement the program. Similarly, as a way of normalizing relations, Chinamasa said in his monetary policy that the government will also start to make token payments. Efforts to get a comment from Chinamasa about the IMF visit were futile as he did not answer his mobile phone. But economic consultant John Robertson tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the IMF mission will be disappointed with Harare as progress has been slow in implementing agreed policies.
Some things have changed, but I'm afraid they've got worse rather than better. The staff monitored program requested of government measures that would reduce government expenditure and reduce the demands that government was making for its own expenditure, specifically on wages and salaries in government. And they wanted to see a reduction of that, and instead there's been an increase in the amounts being paid. And government employment costs have now gone up, it looks like above 80% of total expenditure. And they were hoping to reduce that figure to a much more modest, I think, 22% of GDP. And it looks like it's going to be more like 26 or 27% of GDP. So I think that the IMF is going to be very displeased with our conduct in this regard. We also haven't been very helpful in the business of generating employment within the private sector because investors have been discouraged. We have seen the Minister of Finance, he's come up with his mid-year review, and he said that the indigenization policies have been misunderstood, and people didn't realize that these were actually very agreeable policies and everybody should be happy with them. But in fact, the indigenization policies were very, very much a discouragement to investment. And so we've seen virtually no investment in this country for some years now.
That was economic consultant John Robertson speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
President Robert Mugabe was in South Africa today for meetings with members of the SADC Troika over the deepening political crisis in Lesotho. Mr. Mugabe, who assumed the rotational SADC chairmanship last month, met with President Jacob Zuma of South Africa and the President of Namibia, Pohamba, in Pretoria. The meeting seeks to broker peace and stability between Prime Minister Thomas Tabane and his deputy Mohete Joa Messing, whom he accuses of attempting a military coup last month. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached political analyst Mlamuli Nkomo for perspective.
SADC has been involved in many initiatives to try to solve problems in the region. But what stands out is SADC's inability to take into account the needs of the people or to use democratic principles in solving the issue. It will seem that SADC is only interested in maintaining the status quo, in actually maintaining the same leaders and rulers that are being rejected by the people. So basically, we are seeing a SADC that is interested in security and stability above everything else.
Is there anything that Mr. Mugabe might have learned from the SADC mediation in Zimbabwe that he could apply in the Lesotho situation to find a solution?
What actually SADC did was to buy legitimacy for Mugabe, who was clearly losing that legitimacy. So what actually Mugabe learned from the Zimbabwean issue is that if you try to be in good books, that is, with the SADC leaders, your reign will be actually be sustained. You can continue ruling as long as you are in good terms with the leaders of the region, not necessarily with the people that you are supposed to govern. So what is going to apply here is that if the current leadership of Lesotho, which is facing problems, tore the SADC line or tried to plead their case with the leaders, so SADC might use the military forces or security forces to restore the trust with administration that side. So the lessons that are coming out is that try to be in good books with the leaders. Eventually, you are assured to lead your own people, even if they are no longer interested in you leading them.
That was political commentator Mlamuli Nkomo on the line from Johannesburg with VOA reporter Ntunkamili Nkomo.
The Movement for Democratic Change Formation of Morgan Tsvangirai says it will organize a protest to force the government to fulfill its election promises, including providing jobs to millions of unemployed Zimbabweans. This party spokesman Douglas Monzora tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the party will also hold two crucial national executive and council meetings to deliberate and adopt the party's constitution ahead of the party's elective congress in October.
The most important resolution was that we must go ahead with our congress as set down for the 29th, 30th and 31st of October this year. And there is no going back to that congress. But in going through the congress processes, our party is not going to tolerate people who use violence against each other, whether this violence is physical or psychological.
We also understand that your party is going to hold what it calls crucial meetings this week. May you elaborate?
The main business of this meeting is to look at the report brought by the Constitutional Review Committee on what the people said about what they want in the Constitution. We are going to interrogate that report, measure it against what the people said. That's number one. Number two, to see whether we can have new amendments to the Constitution with a view that we need to make our party more democratic, more accountable and stronger.
That was MDCT spokesman Douglas Monzora in Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
The Bankers Association of Zimbabwe is this evening hosting a dinner in Harare for a Russian delegation seeking investment opportunities in the country, led by Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Event spokesperson Happiness Zengeni tells Studio 7 the Russians are set to sign several deals with Zimbabwe, including huge investments in the mining sector.
The Herald Business and the Bankers Association of Zimbabwe are hosting the delegation from Russia, which in our view is a high power delegation of about 30 to 40 people who are here on a 3-day official visit.
So how many people are going to be at the dinner from Zimbabwe?
From Zimbabwe, its registration was free, so we will take in as much as our budgets allow, which would be about 300. But the last time we had the Zim Sino meeting, we were oversubscribed. We had only budgeted for 200. We ended up having a lot more.
And what is the aim of this dinner?
It's for the Minister of Finance, mainly, to tell us what this Russian delegation is in the country for. Of late, there's been wrong information being peddled in the media of what exactly government is doing in terms of these deals. So I think at the moment they're just trying to promote transparency in government and coming to the public and telling them this is what we're doing with the Russians, with the Chinese, or with anyone who will then come to the country.
That was Happiness Zengeni speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare. Independent economist John Robertson said Russians are likely to conduct business better than the Chinese, whom he says have been exploiting Zimbabwe's natural resources since independence.
And in sports news, the semi-finalists for the $500,000 Chibuku Super Cup have been decided as Lou Van Gaal got his first win in the Barclays English Premiership. As reporter Michael Cariati takes a look at the events that took center stage at the weekend.
Black Rhinos are through to the semi-finals of the Chibuku Super Cup after crashing Triangle 4-0 at Ascot Stadium in Gweru this afternoon. the Zimbabwe National Army side becomes the fourth team to sail through to the semi-finals of the Chibuku Super Cup, joining the likes of FC Platinum, Harare City and Highlanders, who secured important victories over the weekend. Highlanders' 3-1 spanking of their neighbors, Aumine, comes as a welcome relief for coach Kelvin Kaindu, following his team's 4-1 humiliating defeat at the hand of Dynamos in the TM Pick and Pay Challenge last week. The defeat raised anger within the Boso family, with some of the team's fans calling for Kaindu's departure, but the Zambian mentor is relieved.
We've got to score 3 goals, 3 or 4 goals, which was good for us after that defeat.
Highlanders got their goals from Felix Chindungwe, Kendai Ndlovu, and a penalty conversion by the Premier Soccer League's top goal scorer, Charles Sibanda. Aumine coach Luke Masomere admits that his team did not deserve to win, as they did not play well.
It happens in football. Sometimes you play good football and win. Sometimes you play bad and also lose. Today we didn't play well.
Masomere is not alone in his disappointment over his team's ouster. The same can also be said of Cape United, who used to sing. But that singing has died down following another defeat at the hands of FC Platinum, this time not 6-0 but 1-0. Although the defeat was narrow, it was still enough to knock the Green Machine out of the Super Cup. With both Caps United and Dynamos out of the tournament, Harare football fans will turn their support to Harare City, who are still in the tournament after their 2-1 win over Chiredzi. Harare City have picked up momentum following the arrival of Masimba Dinyero in place of Big Boy Mawiwi, and Dinyero is looking forward to his first silverware at the club.
We are in the semi-final and we hope we are going to continue with the good work. Which
Highlanders will meet Harare City in the semi-finals, while FC Platinum will battle Black Rhinos following the draw conducted today. Now to the Barclays English Premiership. Louis van Gaal got his first set of 3 points in charge of Manchester United after his team plundered 4 goals past Queen's Park Rangers. Goals from Angel Di Maria, Ander Herrera, Wayne Rooney and Juan Mata ensured a Red Devils victory. Van Gaal says this is just the beginning of more things to come.
The result is fantastic, but we can better, and we have made a very good new start.
The win has seen Manchester United climb to 9th position on the table, although they are still way off the leaders Chelsea, who have maximum 12 points following their 4-2 win over Swansea. Despite the defeat, Swansea remain in 2nd position with 10 points, one ahead of Aston Villa, who shocked Liverpool 1-0 at Anfield. Southampton, who thumped Newcastle 4-0, are a point behind Aston Villa, with defending champions Manchester City in 5th position following their 2-0 draw at Arsenal. The bottom of the table sees Newcastle, West Bromwich, Henley and Crystal Palace all on 2 points. In another development in sport, the Zimbabwe Davis Cup team arrived in Harare today from a successful tour of duty in Cairo, Egypt, where they won promotion into the Euro-Africa Zone Group 2. The Zimbabweans beat Namibia 2-0 in the semi-finals, having won all their group matches against Congo, Nigeria and Madagascar. The team, which was made up of Takanyi Garanganga, Benjamin Locke, Tirotenda Chanakira, Mark Finn and Captain Martin Zua, had the luxury of not playing the doubles after securing victory within the singles. The team had been in the Euro-Africa Zone Group 3 for more than 5 years. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thank you, Michael. Unfortunately, time is not on our side. That's all we had for you tonight. Signing off is Sandra Nyaira.
And Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.